60. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk cars. So if you want to join us, now's the time, 602-508-0960. And sitting in the co-pilot seat today, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Renee.
And she's my wife.
Your keeper.
And my keeper. And we've been in business together for 39 years. We've been married for 61 years. Or it seems like that.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. Maybe 100.
Yeah, maybe 100. Okay, got a couple stories for you. I think you probably know that I'm a pretty good storyteller.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So there's this friend of mine named Bill Swartz. And he's been a friend of mine since the early 90s. Bill was a commercial real estate guy that we hired to help us buy the land that our business sits on right now. And during that time period, the economy wasn't great at all. So, but the owners of the property we wanted, it's 2.5 acres, were lawyers from Washington, D.C. So it was some kind of a group of guys. So Bill had to negotiate with lawyers. And I think they started off at like $4 a square foot. So four, that'd be $1 million worth of land, okay. Right? No, is it $4?
I don't know, because I don't remember how much.
43,560.
Yeah.
Divided by, well, no, that doesn't work. I don't know. I don't really care either.
I don't know where, yeah. This wasn't the story you were going to, but whatever.
Well, it's close to $500,000. So anyway, I would call Bill on a regular basis and say, where are we at, where are we at? And he'd say, stop calling me. Mm-hmm. I'm working as hard as I can. And then the next day, Bill, where are we at? Where are we at? And he'd hang up on me.
Yeah,
if you remember.
I would too.
Okay, so here's my Bill Swartz story. And Bill, I think, was one of the very first, if not the first, golf
pro
at Dobson Ranch. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that golf course is still around. Of course, Bill's lost most of his gray matter between his ears. So here's the story. Bill is a good customer of mine, and he brought his wife's Escalade in to have it repaired. Picked it up late Friday. Mm-hmm. So my son Alan is on his way home, and I don't know why Bill has Alan's cell phone, but through the grace of God, he does.
You're right.
So Bill calls Alan, and he says, this is a true story. Renee, you just chime in and say, it's not true.
Yes, because you folks know how he embellishes stories, but Bill this might be true.
Bill calls Alan and says, he's really mad. And he says, I'm sitting in my driveway, and I'm locked in my car, and I can't get out. And Alan says, come on, Bill. And he goes, no, I'm serious. I can't get out of the car. So Alan says, okay. And Bill says, you know, I just spent $3,000 there. And Alan goes, well, let's figure out what's the matter. So Alan drives from, like, Peoria over to South
That's
Tempe.
That's an embellishment, but okay. And, well, and he said, we didn't do anything with the doors because we were not
We
doing
didn't touch
any,
anything.
No.
So Alan gets there, and Bill's still sitting in the car. His window is down, and his face is white, and he's sweating profusely. I don't know why he didn't have the motor on. And Alan walks up, and he goes, Bill, what's the matter? I can't get out. I can't get out. That's all he kept saying is, I can't get out.
How am I going to get out of my car?
Yeah. And he and Alan goes, oh. And Alan looks, and the knob is down. The lock button is down. So Alan reaches over with his right hand, which is behind the left ear of Bill, and he lifts the lock up, and he goes, try it one more time. And Bill grabs the handle and opens the door. So at this point, Bill doesn't know what to do. The appropriate thing would have been is to say, I'm sorry, and Alan, let me compensate you for gas to drive from Peoria, and here's another $100 for your time.
And no, so, he just said, how'd you do that? He couldn't believe that he did it that fast.
And he fixed it on the outside of the truck.
Well, I mean, kind of. He reached in, yes.
Yeah, so evidently what's going on is that the electric door locks will lock but not unlock with the button. So Alan says, Bill, why didn't you just turn around and lift this little knob right here? And Bill says, well, I was wondering what I was going to do. Was I going to crawl over the console and go out the passenger door? But if I got to the passenger door and that wouldn't open, then I have to crawl back across. Now, Bill had just come back from a golf game, so I'm assuming He probably was really tired. He was probably didn't have the power within him to crawl over the center console. So he says, I just couldn't, and I didn't know if I had to crawl out the window. And he says, the only thing I thought I could call was Alan.
Yeah. But he said he didn't know what that button was for.
Yeah.
He didn't know there was a manual button to open, unlock the door.
Oh,
oh boy.
This, I hate to admit he's a friend of mine, of the car guys. But anyway, if you're going to buy any commercial property, I can tell you this much. He's a wizard.
Yeah.
He cut their asking price virtually in half.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we paid $235 a square foot, and it was $4 or $5. Neither one of us remembered, but I think he cut it in half.
Yeah.
And he negotiated not with one guy, but a whole bunch of guys. So then, you know how a cat will lay down and relax and lick themselves? So I remember I called him up. I says, Bill, where are we at? And he goes, oh, calm down. I'll tell you when you can start licking yourself. And it was related to a cat. And so he called me one day and he goes, all right, now you can start licking yourself. I said, not till I hear the price. He says, $2.35 a square foot. So I think commercial, this is like I-1 or I-2. I think this, no, it's not even commercial. It's industrial. It's in an industrial complex. I don't know what this sells for today, but it's probably between $10 and $20 a square foot. Nevertheless.
The moral of the story is he's a good real estate guy, but he's not very good with cars.
And I told him I was going to tell the story today,
mm-hmm.
and he threatened my life.
I'm sure he did.
And so Bill Swartz.
Hey,
and,
stop.
And it's Swirtz.
Mark.
He's a good guy.
I know.
He uses his cell phone as his business.
He used to be a good friend of yours, too.
After
this, I'm not sure.
He doesn't have the voice I have. You see, I can get even.
Yes.
So it's a good story. It's a good story. Here's a grown man who's in his 60s that thinks he's locked in his car in a gated community, and he doesn't want to crawl out the passenger window, so he calls Alan, and he says, clippity-clop your butt over here and help me get out of my car. He was in panic. He was in full-blown panic. So, anyway, Bill Swartz is, if you want a commercial guy, if you're looking for commercial property, he works from, Black Canyon City to whatever, Casa Grande. He works everywhere. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by a guy who really knows how to fix cars, and that's Tom at Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been in Deer Valley and North Phoenix since 1983, and I've known Tom since the early 80s, perhaps even before, well, for sure before that, before he opened his own shop. So he has ASE Master Certified Technician. Tom's a really great guy, and if you're a fisherman and Tom's there, then just ask Tom to come outside, and he'll sit in the lobby with you, and you guys can talk fishing for the rest of your lives. But Tom loves that. So anyway, Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Got a couple other things to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So Neil, our customer, comes in, and he tells us about a sputter between 20 to 40 miles an hour. And I'm not quite sure if it's a sputter or a shutter, but I'm not quite sure. So we go through, and we look for any engine codes or any body codes. There's nothing. And we drive the heck out of it, and we can't get it to duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
But we tell him that make sure that he doesn't go past his 5-year warranty. He needs a documentation, and he needs to make sure he took it in there. So he takes it in there and
to the dealer. And the first time they couldn't find anything,
and they didn't do anything.
Right? They couldn't duplicate it. So he said, just last week. It happened again, and his wife and grandkids were in the car, and the car actually died, which I guess every once in a while it had been dying. And he said, okay, this is it. He said, I'm not going to have that happen, and especially with summer coming up. So I'm going to go either trade it in, or they're going to tell me what's wrong with it.
So they take it into the shop. Now, the guy that ultimately diagnosed this was either a young buck or a gray-haired guy, and
right.
My bet is it's a gray-haired guy. It was low on oil. It had a quart or less of oil in it. Now, how does that apply to this? You see, the newer model cars are not going to let you drive your car until the motor is one big melted aluminum piece. We're going to shut the fuel off to the fuel pump when your oil pressure gets real low. You can't count on that, but most cars have that ability for themselves. So he's down to a half a quart of oil. And he's and actually Neil's got 50,000 miles on it.
Yeah, it's a 2017 Jeep Cherokee. I mean, it's relatively new. So
thanks for saying the name of it, which buried the rest of the story.
Sorry.
Okay, so he comes to us and he says, "Good news, it's fixed." He says, "I want you to look at this bad news." Now, this is a written document from Jeep, mm-hmm. a written document, and this is about oil consumption. The acceptable rate of oil consumptions for engines used in vehicles, passenger car, light truck, not for commercial use, is 1 quart every 2,000 miles.
2 minutes.
Folks, would you buy a car if you knew? Now, let's pretend that they're using a synthetic oil and they're at 10,000-mile intervals. Mm-hmm. They're going to add 5 quarts of oil in 10,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So for used in a, you know, a light-duty family thing is 1 quart every 50,000 miles, or every 2,000 miles. And then for the first 50,000 miles, we're going to kind of change that. So with more than 50,000 miles, the acceptable oil consumption is 1 quart for every 750 miles. 1 quart for every 750 miles.
On a new vehicle.
On something, this Jeep, over 50,000 miles.
Right.
1 quart every seven. We haven't seen a car drink that kind of oil forever. Now, here's the problem with that. We're going to consume the oil in the engine. We're going to send this, really, it's not going to be a complete combustion of the oil.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to bring some blue smoke. But we're going to coat the catalytic converter with the byproducts of oil that's coming out of the engine, because it's not going to be leaking that much. Mm-hmm. If it leaked 1 quart every 750 miles, your driveway would look like an oil tanker dropped oil.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that was so confusing is that he had no low oil light on. I mean, there was no lights on the dash, and that's why everybody was puzzled.
And
I don't understand that.
I don't either. You'd have to just do a little bit more, you know, you'd have to look at the owner's manual and the service manual.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, now, this Jeep, less than 50,000 mile, 1 quart at 2,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then after 50,000 miles, it's 1 quart for 750 miles. That's just unbelievable. I had to write down things so I could talk about this, because I'm speechless.
Well, and he said, how often should I get an oil change? Because most people don't check their oil every time they do a fill-up. And really, for me, that's every 750 miles is every two fill-ups. I never check my oil like that.
Well, first of all, you have a Ford, and, you know, I'm hoping you don't check the oil so the thing just burns off the side of the road.
Stop.
Okay. And the thing of it is he has to go back to conventional oil. Because conventional oil has a 3,000-mile oil change.
Mm-hmm.
He can't go to a 10 or 12,000 synthetic.
Right.
He can't do that.
No.
Because he's going to put, he needs to buy a case of oil to put in his trunk with a funnel and some, you know, rubber gloves in order to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing is just silly.
Yep.
But man, that is ugly. So when we come back, we're going to talk about, electronic steering.
Okay.
All right. And there's a great story about that. And it's a story that we couldn't find it either.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a good ending, and it really has to do with something I said on the radio.
Okay.
So that was really good. 602-508-0960. It's 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12, and our focus is you, your car, your needs, your questions, all kinds of stuff. I want to remind you that last week I talked about this spreadsheet that involved newer model cars. This friend of mine, who obviously has nothing else to do in his life, he sent me this spreadsheet that was something I've never seen before. I have never seen the likes of this. It was a spreadsheet that started off with the vehicle, and then it had list price, and it goes all the way down, and underneath each vehicle has to be 20, maybe 30 lines of text. And then he analyzes all of this, and he says that he settled on an electric car, and I don't even remember what kind it was. But he was buying, was it, hey, let me turn your mic up. Wasn't it, 8 or 11 gallons of gas a week. That's what he said.
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay.
You talked to him, I don't
remember. But I had said to people, send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, and I will send you a copy of this spreadsheet. If you're looking for a new car right now, you really need to have this spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. It was amazing about some of the things you saw, some of the costs associated with buying a car, some of the taxes and how the taxes and license plate would affect your buying of this car. Yes. He broke that down. Mm-hmm. Sales tax, license plate fees, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He broke all that down. So how do you say what he is?
Well, he's a clothier. He does custom shirts and things.
I know, but haberdasher?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you say
something
the word,
like that.
That's what he is.
Yeah, and we met him a long time ago, mm-hmm. and because I'm so muscular and so big,
your stomach's muscular. Yeah.
Oh well, thank you.
So is mine. That's all right. Yeah.
Anyway, that's how we met him. Mm-hmm. We had him come in and fit me for some shirts, mm-hmm. and I'm still wearing those shirts, but mm-hmm. it's only done it once for me, and I'm not fishing for him to call me and say I'll give you another 100 shirts. I'm not looking for that.
Yeah.
But this spreadsheet, something amazing. Mark@marksalem.com. Okay. Which one you want to do? Okay, AutoDynamics. AutoDynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Chuck Nyday opened AutoDynamics in 1982. His son Derek now runs the place. And just like the second generation in many of our businesses, they seem to be a little better than we were when we were their age. Perhaps maybe it was just different. Nevertheless, if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, I'd like to recommend AutoDynamics. He's the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. So a great place to go. We got a phone call. Who would it be, Gil?
That would be Sean.
Sean, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good.
Well, good. So I got a couple questions for you. They're all related, obviously. So I got a 2003 Nissan Frontier, and the check engine light came on, took it down to AutoZone. They gave me they scanned it, and they said that I needed a knock sensor. I wish I had the code on me, but I don't. But they said that it needed a knock sensor replaced. So I watched a YouTube video on it, and my question, I don't work on cars. I like working on things. I don't know if it's one of those fixes that I should kind of relay, you know, give it to somebody who is, or, you know, who's, you know, a mechanic, an actual mechanic, or if it's something that I could do myself. Also, and it's related to that, is if I do it myself, like, because I watched the video, and it's pretty
sophisticated. Pretty sophisticated.
Well, you take off a lot of stuff. So when if I'm in there, what else should I do while I'm down in there?
Okay.
So know what I mean?
No. I think now my tongue is in my cheek. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think you ought to take that three-whiskered kid's advice. I think you should look at him as the soothsayer of car repair. I think you should buy the oxygen sensor, which is the reason he told you needed one. And the idea of him knowing what's the matter with your car is like asking him to give you the lottery numbers and knowing that he's going to fix it. So I say you go back and buy the oxygen or the knock sensor. I think you take all that stuff off, and in the process, maybe you'll strip a bolt or break a bolt, or maybe you'll screw up some gasket that you have to buy the whole set for, or this will turn into some giant... What's a nice word? Come
mess.
On. Mess. Mess. Okay? Here's the problem with this whole hypothesis. The knock sensor. Okay? Here's how you test the knock sensor. You put your scanner in, which you don't have, and neither does he. He has this stupid little $29 code reader. And he thinks because it has a code for a mass airflow sensor. Mass airflow sensor.
Knock sensor, is that the same?
And the knock sensor, no. Oxygen sensor, coolant
whatever.
Sensor,
okay.
Whatever. He thinks just because the code's there, it means that's what's wrong. So let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You can go and have somebody check it out for you, but I want to tell you something. An exhaust leak can cause a knock sensor code. Are you ready for that?
Okay.
A broken power steering bracket or a compressor that's knocking, an air conditioning. You see, I plug my scanner into your car, and I start it up, and I look at the knock sensor. You're not going to believe this, but this is $250 worth of diagnostic. I'm going to walk around the front of the car with my scanner in my hand. I'm going to take a hammer, and I'm going to hit some metal bracket once, and I better see the knock sensor raise its ugly hand. If I see the knock sensor raise its hand and say, hey, 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 I hear a knock, then I know it's alive. I know it's fine. I know it doesn't need to be replaced. So I just got to figure out what's setting the knock sensor off. And I'm kidding you about the $200 worth of diagnostic fee. But really and truly, this is something every day in my life. Here's the problem. The customers come into the shop, my shop and every other shop in town, and they say, hey, I want you to replace a knock sensor. And that's because the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts told. Well, they don't tell us that. So we replace the knock sensor. So the knock sensor's got to be kind of expensive. It's certainly somewhere around the 75.
Yeah, 130.
130. I was going to say 75 to 125. That's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. And getting there is going to be a little long because we got to move a lot of stuff, as you already know. So we're going to be a little faster than you are because we're going to use air guns and we're going to know. And if we mess up a gasket, that'll be easy for us to fix. And if we break a power or a vacuum hose, that'll be easy for us to fix. You're going to spend the rest of your life going back and forth between the auto parts store. So, and then the customer says, well, wait a minute, my light came back on. And the answer is we never were working on a light. You did a self-diagnosis. You wanted us to fix your car based on your self-diagnosis and the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, and now you want me to pay or fix this for free? You can't go to the doctor and tell him you've got colorectal cancer and expect him to go in and spend thousands of dollars checking, and you go, oh, well, the three-whiskered kid at AutoZone told me that. Did he say AutoZone? I think he said AutoZone.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway,
yeah,
thank you for letting me tease you. I hope you don't take offense, but there's a lesson here. What part of town are you in?
Chandler.
Okay, stay right there. Okay, stay right there because I'm up against a break. So I'm going to put you on hold, and I'll be back. 602-508-0960. Thirty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. And Sean, are you still there?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Let me tell you what goes on behind the scenes, okay? As soon as you said AutoZone and you said YouTube, my wife is sitting in front of me, and she's got her hands up, and she's saying, calm your butt down, calm your... And Gil is saying in my ear, he's saying, did you just hear that? It was AutoZone and YouTube, which is the two things that just wad my panties up something fierce. Now, I'm not mad at you, but here's the good news. In this one situation... So I don't want anybody else to call and ask for free. It's my choice. Mm-hmm. I give when I want to give. I don't have a shop in Chandler for you. So here's my deal. I'm going to talk to my daughter, Andy, and my son, Alan. They run the place. I'm going to tell them that if you bring your car in, they're going to write a work order on it, and you bring your car in, and you have to go into the bays and watch him look at this car. You got it? You have to be there. Now, I'm not asking you to do advertising for us. I'm not asking for you to get on Facebook. I'm not asking for any of that. But I think it will help you understand. Now, I could be wrong.
I could be wrong.
But he doesn't know that until you do some testing. Mm-hmm. So, and let's be fair. It's not just AutoZone. Okay? It's O'Reilly's. And all those other places. And it's just a thing that they sell parts and the return rate is nothing. So if you put the knock sensor in and it costs you $120, $130 for labor, you're not going to go back in and take it out. So anyway, that's my offer to you. And, Renee, write it down so I can call the kids.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you very much, Sean. Thank you. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. He's the only shop in Mesa. And it's not that he's the only shop that's a good shop in Mesa. So if you have another one and you love it, stay there. The idea is that Thompson family comes from a Thompson and Vivian family, and those two families kind of dominated in the 60s and the 70s, Mesa and Tempe. As a matter of fact, Ken Vivian, I worked for him in 1968 at Broadway and Priest at the Shell Station. He was related to that other Thompson family. Mm-hmm. So I'm just telling you, Brian and Thelma have been around since 1970. Thompson's Auto Repair has been, and Brian and Thelma are really good people. They know right from wrong, and I don't know that we've ever had but one complaint. And when I called Brian, he said, I'll take care of it. And I called the customer back. He says, nope, he took care of it. It was insignificant anyway, but it just got
to
me.
We all have that kind of stuff and happen. Yes.
We do, too. We do, too. So anyway, we'll take care of Sean. But you'll notice I want him in the shop.
Yeah.
Because this is just an opportunity for him to understand. And, folks, one more thing. The code tells you that the problem's in Texas or Ohio. You have to find the city. You have to find the street. And you got to find the house number. And that takes some time. I can't tell you how many mass airflow sensors, and that's a pretty popular code, can be fixed with a vacuum leak problem or a tear in the boot that that connects the mass airflow sensor to the mouth of the motor that's sucking in air. Mm-hmm. Any kind of a cut in the boot, it's an accordion boot that's, I don't know, five, it looks like a big piece of sewer hose.
Right.
It's a big, and so if they're in time, then between the wire spins or the wire support, it'll tear in the middle. And it'll set, so you can take duct tape and fix that.
Right.
And then you have to go in and clear the code, and you have to know if you're charging for your services. They can't come back, because a lot of times they'll stop by the three-whiskered kid and say, pull the code, and if it's the same code, your butt's grass.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, we don't let people normally bring their parts in, and especially something like the NOx sensor, because we have to in there pretty far to get to it, return, you know.
Yeah.
Repair it.
And if it comes in a box that doesn't have a name on it,
right.
then here's the problem there. We put the NOx sensor in. Somebody carries it in. Mm-hmm. And we put the NOx sensor in, and then they say the code's still there. Well, the only way we can prove that it wasn't our labor is we have to go diagnose it for free.
Yeah.
And for us, you better, we have 38,000 customers, right? Mm-hmm. Then I looked
34,
at that.
Yeah.
34,000, okay. I looked the other day. If your customer number is a two-digit, which I don't think there's very many, or a three-digit, or a four-digit, we'll probably let you bring your parts in at least once.
Right.
And there's some old guys that have done business with us since the late 70s, early 80s, and they like a particular oil that we don't sell, and we let them bring their oil in. So we're like other shops. We're not going to make a habit of this. Now, what we usually tell our customers is if you want to bring in a part.
1 minute.
Then you can do it one time. You should probably bring in a big part that costs $400. You shouldn't waste it on an alternator that's going to save you $60 or $70.
Right.
So just do it in a much bigger fashion. It's a really tough thing to do to install a part you can't even identify what name it came with. And it's in a box that you can't identify. And then maybe you take it out. Now, on this NOx sensor, it's going to have threads. It's going to screw into something. Mm-hmm. You take it out of the box, and the tape on the threads is destroyed. So somebody's already installed this. Now, what happens if they installed this and it didn't fix their car? They put it back in the box. Who's to say it's still good?
Exactly.
So it's a difficult situation. To deal with, and we deal with it virtually every day.
Mm-hmm.
We also have what else do we do for customers? They can do it one time. We have something that good customers can do.
I can't even think of anything, but something easy that's easy to install that isn't like you have to take the dash apart or anything like that.
Oh, and what they want to do is sometimes our customers will go on YouTube or somewhere else, and they'll find out that the part that we charged them is $70 more than they can buy it for.
Mm-hmm.
So we let them back that up, and we'll put a $70 credit on their account. But they can only do that once a year. And we say to them, don't waste it on $20. If you're going to waste it on an air conditioning compressor where it's $60 difference between your price and my price.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we buy about $50,000 worth of parts a month. We sell about $50,000 worth of parts a month. And you're not going to come in and tell me that you can buy the part for half as much as I did. That's not going to fly. I'm going to want proof of that. But if you come in and say, you know, you charged me $40 more than you should have or whatever, then if you want the $40 back, fine. We'll give it to you, but you can only... Why waste it on something at $40? Why don't you wait until 60 or 70?
Well, and it's always going to be a little bit more than what they can buy it for the warranty and all that stuff.
Right. And then if it goes bad or if there's a problem, we have to do it for free.
Right.
And so if it's my part, you have a whole different benefit plan than if you bring in your own part. So, and I think a lot of shops are that way.
I think so, too.
I think a lot of the stuff that we do, we copy from other shops. Mm-hmm. We hear about it when we're out at the bar drinking, you know, when you're drinking and we're with the husbands and the wives and stuff like that.
We don't do that.
Okay. I'm sorry. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open if you'd like to call and tell us a success story. And, Marty, don't go anywhere. You stay right there because when we come back, you're first.
Now you have a friend at Thunderbird Automotive.
Five minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and you're what?
We need to go to Marty real quick. He's been waiting a long time.
Marty, I'm being ordered to take your call, and I was going to take his call as soon as I got done with the time. Okay, Marty, what's up?
Hey, I have a 2008 Subaru Forester with 210,000 miles.
Okay.
I drive a lot for work. Sometimes I'm 300 or 400 miles away from home. Does it make sense for me at some point just to go ahead and change the fuel pump? There's no fuel filter on the car. It's just part of the sock for the fuel pump.
So. Yeah. How many miles? 110 or 210?
210.
Oh.
So the car is like the original fuel pump, 11 years old.
Yeah. I wouldn't cut any corners. Do you know if you have to drop the tank or is there an access hole underneath the back seat or something like that?
Yeah, there's an access. I did it on my other Forester I had.
All right. I'd run it as low as I could. So that you can take a flashlight and look to see if there's any debris down in the tank. If it's got 8 inches of gas, you're going to have a tough time seeing that. I absolutely believe if you want this to be dependable, you are way past the life of an electric fuel pump. And don't give me that. Right. All of you Subaru owners can't call me and say, oh, on a Subaru we do that, because that's not true. But I admire you for thinking about that. And, of course, you know that when it fails, you're stuck. Wherever you're at, you're stuck.
Yeah.
So, no, I agree. Now, I also want to tell you, I think you should call around and get fuel pump names, what brand is it, and price, and warranty. Those three things, brand, name, price, and warranty. And I think if you're going to do it yourself, I think you just should shop around. Now, there's some places that you can't buy from. There's what we call WD, Warehouse Direct. Those are guys that service me. But if you know somebody in the automotive business and they owe you a favor, then you can use it on them. But... that's the best advice I can give you.
Okay.
All right.
I have one other question too on a high performance engine, like my other car. I've added a supercharger to it. Are the premium synthetics going to give me any better protection than just the 020 from Subaru?
You know, but the 020 is a synthetic.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Yeah. Are the premium synthetics, you know, like AMSOIL and Royal Purple, are they going to do anything better than the 020?
All of those you made, there's only four companies, Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. They're the ones that pull it out of the ground and make engine oil. That AMSOIL came from one of those people, and that AMSOIL is packaged in a lot of other brands. The answer to your question is I'd get the cheapest 020 I could find. And I'd put it in. I wouldn't care what brand it is. Now, for, 20 years we sold Valvoline. Mm-hmm. And now we're with Chevron. Mm-hmm. So some people have said, you know, well, what? It's just a matter of price for me. I want a good oil, but I also want the cheaper I buy it, the cheaper I sell it. And so that's kind of what motivates me. But I wouldn't have switched 5 200-gallon tanks. I wouldn't have switched everything to Chevron if I thought there was a second worth of risk.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, the answer is just shop price. This is going to be okay. All righty. Anything else, Marty?
No, that's it. Thanks.
You betcha. All right. Let's go to Bill. Bill, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I have a two-part problem.
Okay.
It has to do with engine vibration and driveline vibration because I have both.
Okay.
This is a 1965 Corvette.
Okay.
Originally was a 396. It now has a 454.
Okay. That doesn't bother me. But let's talk about the engine. You just talked about an engine vibration and a driveline vibration. Tell me how you tell the difference.
Okay. Well, engine vibration, you can feel at neutral park, sitting in a parking lot, and rev it up. And it will vibrate at 3,500. Starts coming in about 2,000, about 28 to 3,000. And it doesn't ever really go away, but, you know, the engine's doing so much that by that it tends to all run together. You don't really feel it separately.
Now's the time for me to ask you questions. First of all, you're not driving your Corvette. I mean, you're not in neutral at 3,000 RPMs. So I'm not real concerned about that. But what you're talking about is motor mounts. The only reason you'd feel the motor in the body of the car is because you got either a tranny mount bad or you got one of the two motor mounts are bad. So that's the only reason.
Okay.
It's not going to have anything to do with the motor.
This is a real shake now. This isn't just engine vibrator. It's a real shake.
Well, I guess you're going to have somebody look at it, because a shake is a lot different than an engine miss or an engine, a high performance engine.
No engine miss.
Okay.
No, this thing pulls like a freight train when you're wide open.
Okay, we're gonna move on. The drivetrain vibration. Explain that to me.
Okay, the drivetrain vibration. I installed a 5-speed in it, and the driveline angles is what I'm concerned about. I'm thinking that there may be something in the driveline angles that are causing it to shake. When you you're doing 70 or so, it starts coming in about 60, 65, 70, but it's not a tire vibration. You know, there's the difference.
One's okay, all right, hold on. You're telling me your diagnosis, and I'm not interested in your diagnosis. I'm interested in talking about the symptoms, because I am questioning why you're getting where you're at. You say that you can tell the difference between a vibration on a drive shaft and a tire vibration, and I'm going to call your bluff. I'm going to tell you that my senior tech, he'll probably pick up a real aggravated side. But Eddie's been with me for 33 years, and he wouldn't step up and say, "I got this, boss." He wouldn't say that. He'd go drive it. I really think you need to get another opinion. Otherwise, or you can do whatever you want. Putting a 5-speed and changing the drive shaft is going to change the dynamics. There's a drive shaft shop in Mesa that I really respect. It's a good shop. And you can take it over there and say, can you do this? And maybe they'll take a ride with you. Maybe there'll be a charge for it. I don't really know. Maybe you take the drive shaft out, do your own diagnosis, and take it down to them and say, I want you to spin it at this angle. Put an angle gauge on top of the drive shaft and take it down there and say, can you spin this? Second of all, would you check to see if it's in balance? So you've modified the car substantially. I don't know. It's on Southern, I think. Arizona drive shaft?
Yeah.
Arizona drive shaft?
Yeah. I've been there, and they did determine I have a vibration in the driveline and one in the engine.
Okay.
They corrected the driveline angle best they could. We ended up, because you move the tail shaft over, now the fan starts rubbing against the shroud, so that's as far as you can go on that day. And so I'm probably going to go back. I was totally impressed with them also. They're excellent folks.
All right. Well, we're not going to do this anymore. We talk about, I talk about let's do this, and I've already done that. And he's already told me no. And this guy's told me, no, it doesn't. I can't help you. You've modified the car. You put a 5-speed in a car that didn't have it. I don't care that you have a 454. A 454 doesn't weigh any more than a 396. Now you tell me he's created a problem where the fan is hitting the shroud. We have to move that tail end of that car a long way before we do that. And if you've got an alignment problem between the center line and the center line of that transmission, you got a problem that somebody else is going to have to do. I mean, this is diagnosable, but let me make the best suggestion I can to you. Forget all of your diagnosis, okay? Take it to somebody you like and say, come take a ride with me. And take one at a time. Take the drive line or the vibration that you think is the drive line, and don't tell them that, because you're just going to turn off everybody. All the really good guys out there, we have gray hair, and we're not gonna dance with somebody who wants to tell us how to fix their car or tell us how to diagnose their car. We got enough of those people already. So my suggestion to you is, from my heart, say nothing. Just ask them, let's take a ride. If you can make the vibration at 3,000 RPM, then have them do that. I want to tell you something. One of the best vibration guys you just came away from, I used him on a case where nobody else in the world could come close, and he pulled that rabbit out of his hat. He did something I've never seen anybody do. So I'm a little concerned that he couldn't address your drive shaft or your drive line or your drive train problem and the motor problem. I'm a little, I don't know. I don't, and I know that there's one guy down there that's the real big dog of mm-hmm. that thing. But anyway, Bill, thanks very much. Who's next, Gil?
That would be Bob.
Bob, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. I've been told a couple different conflicting things. I have a 2016 Pilot all-wheel drive. The tires are getting pretty worn. It's 50,000 miles on the original tires. And the gentleman at the Honda dealer said, don't get it aligned until you get your new tires because it's just going to throw it off. And I mentioned that to somebody else, and they laughed at me. They said, your tires don't make any difference. The alignment machine hooks up to the hubs, not the tires. Can you straighten me out on this?
Yeah, I can. Real easy. Let me ask you, let's talk about the tires. Does any of the front tires, now I expect a little bit of outside wear on each front tire, because the tire, when you turn right, it kind of lays over on the outside of the tire. It's camber. It's called camber. So other than even Steven, a little bit of wear around the outside of both front tires, is there anything else?
No.
Okay, then just put the tires on it. I mean, we align cars for problems. It pulls left, it pulls right, abnormal tire wear. Inside wear on the right front, outside wear on the left front, or we got scrubbing across the front because the toe end, you know, it's kind of a pigeon-toed front end. So I disagree that we have... Why would you do an alignment after you take off tires that have no wear pattern? So I will tell you that you need to shop around on tires because you have to buy four with your all-wheel drive. What brand have you looked at?
I've always liked Michelin, okay. But I'm open to anything. Right. I don't really know what's best.
Okay, well, let me tell you. I own 37 cars, which includes all the company cars, all of our rental cars, all of our private cars. And every vehicle I have, including my wife, who I love sometimes, my daughters, who I love all the time, my grandkids, who I love all the time, every single car in our fleet has Toyos on it. Now, I've been in the tire selling business since 1979. Michelin certainly does represent a perceptive idea that it's the best tire on the road. Pirelli's better. Pirelli is a stickier tire, but because it's so doggone sticky, it wears out fast. So if you got a Jaguar and you want to drive like some kind of an English race car driver, put Pirelli's on there. They'll wear out in 15,000 miles. I would just ask you to look at the Toyo. Now, in Atlanta, Georgia, the Toyo factory makes 55,000 tires a day or something like that. My son went there, and he says they pull a every tire comes out, they air it up, and they spin it. And if the tire has a malfunction, they stop that line, and then they fix the problem, and then they go back, they go forward and take a bunch of tires out of service. Not only that, customer service is second to any. I mean, they're not second to anybody as far as I'm concerned. Now, you don't have to buy any. If you got a comfort zone with Michelin, go right ahead. I'm just offering you an option based on a lot of years.
I'll try them.
Okay. All right. And don't worry about, you know, people go Nipendenzo and Toyo and all. I'm not worried about that. Your Pilot. Probably was like Chevys and Fords. 75% of your Pilot was built offshore. It was assembled in the United States or Canada or Mexico. So it's just one of those things. The first digit in the VIN number will tell you where it was assembled. Not built, but assembled. That's a big difference. So anyway, well, good luck to you, Bob. And,
yeah.
And whatever you do, just get another price. And I think you'll find that you're going to have a significant savings between the two. All righty?
I'll do that. Thank you.
You betcha. I think we have another caller.
Actually,
no, he dropped. We're done.
Yeah, and Bill had that question, but we probably need to do that on the other side of the hour. We'll do this one.
Okay, Bill, you stay right there because I'm going to get you first on the other side of the hour. So it's 58 minutes after 10. We'll be back about 4 minutes after the top of the hour.
Talk to Mark. Call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960, and my wife, during the break, chastised me about the cars we owned. But in reality, I told her, and I'll tell you, there's five Salems,
mm-hmm.
okay, in our company, and we all have spouses. And so we have shop trucks that chase parts, and we have a shuttle bus.
Yeah.
We have maintenance trucks. So we have lots and lots of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my defense, I may not have had 30 or 32 or 31. I may not have had that, but we have a lot of responsibility. And we have, well, we have them on the motorhome, the old motorhome.
You must have added in all your toys. I don't know.
Maybe I did. Maybe I did. My truck and the big truck, the 10-wheelers got them. And Clifford, the big semis, got them on the front. And
are
the
you
reason,
sure?
Yep.
I think
and
those are.
I just had Alan replace them, and I'll tell you why. He said, what do you want? I said, well, if the big truck, the semi, blows a tire at 65, I'm in big trouble. So I want Toyos on the front. Now, I did put the cheaper tires on the back.
Okay.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, okay.
But those are expensive. Those are like $300 my cost tires.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we want to talk about Kurt's Auto Repair. And you know something? I always forget the names of the two young bucks.
I don't.
Listen.
You do, too.
Listen.
There, I do, too.
It's my best friends, Eric and Jeff.
Oh, my.
You see what I'm saying? Eric and
there
Jeff are former retired policemen.
Yeah.
And I have daily contact with both of them.
Right.
And so I'm always forgetting one of these guys. But it's Eric and Jeff.
There you
anyway,
go.
Anyway, Eric, Jeff, and Kurt.
Right.
Are a pair to a threesome to draw to because they are all master techs, and the two young bucks, Eric and Jeff, Kurt will walk in and say, "Oh, this guy said he's been all over town. Nobody's been able to fix his cars, and you guys probably don't have a prayer in heck of fixing this." And of course, Jeff and Eric, that just raises their back up, and they're thumping their chest, saying, "Oh yes, I can." None of that was true, but Kurt does that because those guys are really good. I-17 in Bell Road, northeast corner. Been around a very long time, since 1987. They do gas and diesel. And if you want, you can take your weed eater over there, and they'll even fix that. And of course, they hate it when I say that, but I'm just pulling their chain.
Aggravating as usual.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, I'm going to talk about John. John had a Corolla, and it's a salvage title vehicle. And remind me, I want to talk about that.
Okay.
He wants to know if he has a motor mount problem.
Okay.
And I wish I knew where he lived, because I would send him to a shop. And John's not on the radio right now because he's hard of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, the answer to your question is there's a very simple procedure to check your motor mounts. It's a very simple procedure. And I could drive your Toyota Corolla, and I could tell you virtually within 5 miles whether you needed the driver's side, the passenger side, the upper mount. If it's a front-wheel drive, I'm pretty sure. The upper mount, the lower mount. There's probably 4 mounts in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be kind of easy. But if I knew where you were at, I would ask.
I think he said 7th Avenue and Baseline.
He did.
That's Baseline and 7th Street.
He did.
7th Street, okay.
Yep, Baseline and 7th Street. We don't have anybody out there.
No. No, but maybe... Oh, Harker's is pretty far, isn't it?
Yeah, that's way up. But Billy's, Bill, 25th Street Auto, he'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
He'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If Billy has a checkout charge, just tell him to send it to me.
Okay.
So Billy would do it. And he's an old drag racer, and he's a gray-haired guy. And he's been around the block a couple of times. 25th Street Auto, I think it's 25th Street and Indian School.
It is, yes.
So if you wanted John to drive that far, the other option, and it's probably just as far, is our shop, Warner and I-10. So you could come there, and we would take a quick look at your car and help you identify if it's the motor mounts, and if so, which one it is.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not the testosterone zone. This is symptoms analysis, asking questions, back and forth. That's how I'm the best that I can be, is I ask questions and back and forth. I'm not interested in what Uncle Festus says, who lives in Philadelphia. I'm not interested in a lot of stuff that I hear. I'm interested in symptoms and then talk back and forth.
And I think his question was, can I replace two and not all four, or however many he had? And sometimes you can.
Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes. It's kind of like replacing one worn cowboy boot with the heel half gone and keeping having one new and one old.
Mm-hmm.
It could create some other vibration problems, because now we've got one portion of the engine tilted up, which means we're loading the other three mounts more.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got, it's like, let's just talk a stupid story. You got a horse.
Okay.
And you leave one hoof real long, and the other the hooves have been trimmed real short.
Mm-hmm.
That horse is going to hate you,
mm-hmm.
and he's not going to have a normal gait. So I don't really like – now, in his particular case, because there's some other personal issues that you and I know about, because he didn't want to be – then I, and it's a salvage car. My fear is that he goes in and does all four mounts, and it's not – it's an alignment problem, or it's some kind of a cradle problem, because this car's been wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to talk about salvage cars.
Okay.
Salvage. First of all, there's a lot of insurance companies that will not even insure a salvage car. Here's a salvage car. Renee Rexer Ford. Sooner or later, I'm hoping that's going to happen. She's all right. You wreck your Edge.
Okay.
And the cost, let's just pretend it's got a value of $15,000, because it doesn't, but I'll give you that. At $15,000, there's $18,000 worth of damage. They're not going to pay $18,000 to fix a $15,000 car. So they're going to pay you off, and that car is going to go to an auction, and hopefully some guy at a wrecking yard will buy it, because the front end is blown up to the windshield, but the back end of the car is just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to sell the back doors and the trunk lid and the rear bumper and all that jazz. So that's what is, but what's happening is there's guys that go to the auctions and buy that car, and they take it home and fix it in their backyard. Now, there are so many safety issues about getting the, I'll give you an example. The windshield on a front end collision is supposed to pop out, okay, not in on you.
Okay.
But if you don't install it right, if you don't use the right glue, if you don't know what you're talking about, can you think of, on a bad accident, that windshield coming back and pasting you in the face?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if their welds are good, and they don't have the sophistication to line the car back up. So you have all these dynamics where this car was wrecked so bad, they threw it away. And you picked it up and took it home, and you happen to be somebody who is a cowboy. I know cowboys have tough skin.
Okay.
So this guy's a cowboy, and he saw his neighbors do it, so he buys, you know, a sophisticated car and says he's going to fix it up. His success rate's pretty slim.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going to buy something used, you have to ask for the title first. You want to make sure it's not a salvage car, because the salvage car has less than 50% value. So a car that's okay and never been wrecked has a $15,000. But a salvage title, that's going to start at the 5 or 4 and move up towards half that $15,000.
And once you buy one, it's hard to resell it to someone else, because most people won't buy a salvage car.
And not only that, is when they bring it to us, we know immediately it's a salvage car. So we'll say to you, look at the title, and it'll have salvage stamped on it.
Right.
So that's something that you want to eliminate. I already did Kurt's.
I know. You're behind one. We have a caller. Who's on the phone, Gil?
That would be John.
John, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Actually, I'm calling about that guy with the Corvette, the 65, the 454 in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what transmission he put in there, but he did mention park. So I'm thinking some kind of an automatic.
You know, you may have picked something up that I didn't. I thought he put a 5-speed, but he didn't say. I assumed that it was a manual transmission. If I was wrong, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but anyway, what I was thinking is the fact that it originally started with a 396. He's changed it to a 454. 396 is internally balanced, and 454 is externally balanced.
See, this guy knows more than I do.
Way to go. I'm glad you called today, John.
John, do you need a job?
He probably already has one, and he's working.
Yeah.
John, fixing cars that you're not.
John, are you a car fixer?
Not that much. You tried to hire me a long time ago when I was working for Steve over at Dobson and Baseline.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was 100 years ago.
Yeah, that was 100 years ago. And
yeah,
I'm impressed that you did that, that you brought that. I never would have thought of that. So you're go ahead.
Put the right flex plate in there. If you didn't put the right flex plate in there, that 454 will shake itself.
Okay.
Would that cause both the driveline and the engine vibration, do you think, or?
I don't think it would affect it that much on the outer end of the transmission, but look at the front end.
Yeah, but if he didn't have the flex plate balanced, would that vibration translate all the way to the back and shake that rear drive shaft? I'm asking you to kind of close your eyes and dream.
Well, I would say it's not outside the realm of possibility, but he's got it, you know, shaking when it's sitting there and shaking when it's going down the road. So
okay,
who knows?
All right, explain to people what internally balance is and externally balance.
Well, it's the crankshaft itself spinning in there. You've got the counterweights and the boring and the holes, you know, to get the balance between the pistons going in and out, and the crankshaft spinning around to try and be smooth. With the 454, they had to put an externally balanced flex plate / flywheel on the back end, and same with the harmonic balancer up front.
Okay. All right. So if the crankshaft, which is an elliptical thing that spins really fast.
I'll be right with you. I'm on the phone here. I'll be ready.
So the crankshaft spins real fast, and it's elliptical. So we balance that all by itself. What he's saying is on the 454, the crankshaft's not balanced. So the harmonic balancer that sits at the front of the crankshaft and the flywheel and flex plate sits at the back crank, we use those to kick the vibration down, to take care of the vibration. Mm-hmm. So it's externally balanced as opposed to internally balanced. In the internal balance, you're gonna do that with, you're gonna balance the crankshaft in a fixture. It's gonna tell you. All right. Hey.
So John, hopefully Bill's still listening, huh?
Yeah. Well, he and John just brought something great up.
Yeah.
John, if you're still looking for a job, I'd be interested in talking to you.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that was a great call.
1 minute.
If you peek at your security in the car wash, you'll see my big black truck getting washed every once in a while.
Okay.
Oh, hey, why don't you just walk in the front door and ask for an application?
He must be there on the weekends, huh?
Are you there on the weekend? Okay, all right.
Every time the truck gets filthy enough for me to wash.
Okay, all right. Are you washing in the right bay?
That's what I was just going to say. Is it a muddy bay or what?
Oh gosh.
I pull it in the West Bay, you know, because it's tallest. I raise the bed up every once in a while.
Oh, okay.
And it always seems like somebody right ahead of me washed the mud off their truck and left it.
Oh,
yeah. For me to track around.
People don't read that sign that says, could you use the East Bay, but I don't know.
And that's all we're trying to do is contain the mud to one bay so that other three bays, people can get out in their high heels on Sunday morning and rinse off their car. But it's difficult. And the other thing that hurts us really bad in a self-serve car wash is people that come in and wash all kinds of stuff out of the bed of their truck.
Yeah. I mean, don't know who they think cleans it up, but it's irritating. They wouldn't do that in their driveway.
No, that's true. But anyway, for a buck and a half, they can do it car wash.
Yeah.
Okay, John, thank you very much for cleaning up the mess I clearly made. I didn't. And you know what? That would have shut down the conversation right then.
Yeah.
That would have shut the conversation down right then.
Way to go, Mark.
And no, that's the reason. There's a lot of guys that are going to back me up. I was on my cell phone. I called John.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Of course, right. That's not true. I don't even have his phone number.
Okay.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. John, you have my eternal gratitude. And if I see you over at the car wash, I'm going to buy your car wash. I'm going to load you with $6 worth of quarters and have you just spray your truck down until you're tired. Anyway, thank you very much. We'll be back. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open. 602. I almost gave my cell phone number. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. John, I am so glad. In my defense, my hard drive has been broken for a long time, and my RAM is completely gone. So there's just not enough room on my hard drive to absorb everything in the automotive industry, but when I say something wrong, when I don't get it, most always someone will call and correct me, and for that I'm very grateful. So let me talk about a couple of shops that are really good in diagnostics. Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Tom's really good with diagnostics. He's really good when you wave the red flag in front of him. Tom, I've had this to 10 different shops. I can demonstrate it every time, and would you take a ride with me and tell me what you think it is? Oh, boy. He'll just work until he's bloody and the knees of his Levi's are gone, and he'll fix your car. 40th Street and Greenwell. But he does oil changes and brake jobs and everything else. So he's a good guy. Now, on the other side of town, at 38th Avenue and Indian School, is Larry Harker's Auto. Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Auto, and they've been around since 1967. What's important here is Bob is like Tom. From the west side, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Bob is an amazing diagnostician. He is one of those guys that will just go to the end of the earth to fix something. And I remember distinctly I sent him a Dodge truck. Nobody could fix that Dodge truck. However, in my defense, he didn't bring it to our shop. But I don't think we could have fixed it. Mm-hmm. I think what Bob did, well, clearly what he did fixed it. But by the same token, it was a sophisticated diagnosis and a sophisticated repair. So if you're on the east side, the northeast side is covered by Tom Blackwell, 40th and Greenway. The northwest side, or you know, kind of middle, central Phoenix north, then 38th Avenue. Thank you very much. There's so many things going on in front of my head. The time's changing. You know, the Gil's talking
you're
to me.
You're just mad because you didn't diagnose that one vehicle.
No, I'm not. I'm not mad.
I think you get, when somebody starts telling you what their diagnosis is, you get frustrated and you don't always listen to everything. Well,
you might
have thought about it.
You're right. But isn't it make sense that I'm not interested in your diagnosis. I want to ask you questions, mm-hmm. and I want to get good answers.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between...
You want the symptoms.
Yeah, you're right. I want the symptoms. There's nothing wrong with that.
I know.
I deserve the symptoms.
You're crazy.
Yeah, I know I am. Everybody else has said that, too.
Yep.
All righty. Well, when it comes time for car repair, the symptoms are obviously something that you can give us.
Right.
And there are times, you'll have to admit, there are times that the customer will nail the symptoms.
Yeah.
And that's called a front counter diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Now, most of us get bit by that, and I don't even do it anymore. Oh, yeah, I know what that is. Well, I tell them it's B, and it turns out to be L.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have to backtrack.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of front counter diagnosis that can happen with the proper symptoms. Mm-hmm. That's really, really important.
Yeah.
So we had a customer, and here's a failure of us.
Okay.
We had a customer with a problem, and he said the symptoms were really strange.
Okay.
And something that I hadn't ever heard before. He said that, I can't find it here now, but he said that he had a problem at 30 to 40 miles an hour when he turned, something was wrong. And so he brought it to us, and we couldn't find anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't happen for us. And so you can't fix what you can't find. Now, when you have that problem, you have two options. You can start guessing, but it's not going to be with the shop's money.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask the shop to make an educated guess, or you must wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Those are the only two possibilities. Or you can dance the car all over the town and see if somebody can fix it. So here's his email back to me. First of all, he's really nice. And he's given me, I'm going to play this on the backside of getting my butt eaten by the Corvette guy.
Okay.
He says that he took it in, and this story is long. I said to him, here's the conversation. He was approaching his warranty,
okay.
and he hadn't taken it in yet. And I said, take it in and get the symptoms down. And then take it in one more time before warranties, because they can't not fix it after the warranty line is at, because you had two symptoms that match it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I drove it, I took it this place, and he said, then I decided to go to the regional tech, the Nissan regional tech, for a test drive. We spent 20 minutes driving around. Of course, it acted perfectly. He hooked up a vehicle data recorder programmer to monitor the system in my car computer. I asked if he could keep the monitor to record events. After 11 months of having this problem, they were able, by the data from the monitor, to remove and replace the hydraulic electric power steering system and steering motor and module. The module tells it what to do, but the motor, it's power steering, but it's not a power steering reservoir and power steering fluid and power steering hoses. This is an electric motor that we're steering the car with. It's very sophisticated.
Yeah.
And, you know, we never even came close to that.
I mean,
we didn't even come close to that. So I write him back and I go, did I know that this had power steering? So I'm kind of making an excuse.
Yeah.
And then I said, because if it did, like my wife said, you only hear what you want to hear. I didn't hear. But I suspect he didn't know it had power steering, electric power steering anyway. Your repair matches perfectly with the symptoms of a bad electronic steering mechanism. I'm glad to be part of getting your damn car fixed. But I can think of one or two other vehicles that have had the same kind of problem that took us a while to figure out.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
And so that's kind of one of those things.
I think I remember we had a call not that long ago that you didn't know it had electronic steering or something like that.
Oh, that's right. It was at the very kind of tail end of the conversation.
Right.
Whoa. I,
yeah.
I, Now, we also had somebody call in the other day. He was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something you said really changed something big for me.
Okay.
And basically what he said is this. I was talking to you, and you said that you want to start fresh on a car repair that nobody's been able to fix.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You want to start fresh. And so you don't want to see all the other tickets because all the other efforts haven't fixed your car. So why am I going to go analyze all the other efforts?
Mm-hmm.
He said, so I'm a doctor, and I got sued. And he says, so I went in, and the guy was suing me because I didn't order all of his records in advance. And they asked me a question about that. Why didn't you order the records? And he goes, I wanted a fresh pair of eyes, and I didn't want to be contaminated by all the other people that hadn't fixed him.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, the legal case just blew away at that point.
Wow.
He says, I was out of the courtroom in minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He says, it was over and done with. Because it's a perfect example of somebody that doesn't want to look at the past mistakes of others. Let's move forward, not backwards.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to benefit that you've taken it to 72 shops? I exaggerate.
Yeah.
Six other shops. And this is what they did to try to fix it. Why are we going to benefit from traveling that road? The real question is this. Did they change it?
Right.
And if they changed it, somebody's on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960. You better start calling in. I'm lonesome. Four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark and Renee Salem sitting here next to one another. Actually, she's in the co-pilot seat, so she sits in front of the desk, but I'm flying the airplane, so just to make sure everybody
understands. You're trying
to fly the airplane. I'm trying to fly it. I've already crashed it a couple of times today. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around Phoenix since 1968. Phil was around when Fred Flintstone's stone-tired car first came on. And he's really good. 40th Street in Washington, if you've ever been up and down 40th Street in Washington area on the north side of the road, you'll see a transmission shop that's been there for a very long time. I think he was one of the first settlers of Phoenix, Phil. And he's just really good at what he does. So if you're in Phoenix and you're looking for a transmission shop, Automatic Transmission Exchange, let's go to Shannon. Shannon, good morning to you.
Hi, Mark. You told me to call back when I got my possessed Dodge Journey fixed.
Okay, I'm ready.
A couple weeks ago, I called you and was telling you what my Dodge Journey was doing, and I had taken it to the dealership, and remember, they replaced my navigation radio system for lots of money, and it did not fix the problem.
Okay.
So I did exactly what you told me to do. I called Larry Harker and told him that this idiot on the radio told me to call him because he was the only one in the valley who could help.
I love it.
And that's waving the red flag as good as anybody can do it.
Yeah, but the idiot part I like too. Okay, go ahead.
Oh.
Okay. So he said that I needed it to be doing the problem for them to diagnostic the problem. So I was coming home from work at the airport, and I called him on a Tuesday. It was like 2:30. I said, it's doing it. Can I bring it in? And he said, well, 2:30, how far out are you? And then he said, yeah, just come in. And so I went in, and he put it on the bay, and they did the diagnostics. I guess they can make it like it's running, and
yes,
they found it.
Yes.
47 minutes later, they fixed the problem at the price of just the diagnostics when I've already paid almost $700 to the dealership for the wrong diagnostic.
Okay. You didn't happen to ask for your old part back, did you?
Well, see, I didn't know to do that until I talked to you.
Okay.
And it
okay.
was too late. So I did call the dealership back, and Ellen even told me I would call them and tell them what we did to repair it. It was a super easy fix. And so I finally got hold of a service manager over at the dealership, and I said, just out of curiosity, why don't you offer people their old parts? Because I am now aware that you should do that. And if you would have given me my old radio, I would ask you to put it back in because it didn't fix the problem. And the other thing is, when we took the Dodge in, they asked what the symptoms were, and the first thing that happened was the radio would fade out. We didn't tell them we want our radio replaced, you know, and we thought they were the expert, and yeah, so okay. Buyer beware.
Okay, two mistakes, but thank you for calling in because we learn from our mistakes, and believe me, when my wife's doing the radio, I learn from mistakes too. There's two things. Number one, you should have said at the very beginning, you should have said, is this a guess or a fix? Because you know, and I know, and everybody that's listening to this knows, well, the radio fades in and out. Well, it's got to be the radio. And the radio comes with the entire entertainment system, so we have to replace it all. That's what happened.
Right.
So it was a guess. So you looked the service writer in the eye and say, you have to understand something. I'm not paying for a guess. Now, did you pay with a credit card?
No, and I know that now.
Okay.
If I ever have to go for repairs, I will go to Larry Harker. I'll call you.
All right.
But I know to ask if it's a guess or a fix, and I know now to ask for my old part as well.
And the third thing, pay with a credit card. Because they're not big enough and bad enough to mess with Visa, MasterCharge, or Discover.
Oh.
Okay? And you can question the repair. Harker writes a ticket. You send their ticket in. This one fixed it. This one didn't. And send it through. Now, something else. The dealerships are really consumed with CSI, Customer Satisfaction Index. Did you happen to get a card when you had your car fixed?
Nope.
Okay, you go back and get one. Just go back and say, you know what? My car was in here not so long ago, and there's a card that I'm supposed to rate you. Well, can I have one? You didn't get one. Now, when you write that card and you tell them your story, I guarantee you all hell's going to break loose. CSI has to do with how much they pay for a new car, how much they pay for parts. It's tied to everything. It's kind of like your behavior grade, which I would get an F for most of the time. Just be quiet,
there
Renee.
You go.
Just be quiet. And so, and no matter how good I am and no matter how many people I have, Renee's going to give me an F for behavior, some of the things I say. But nevertheless, I am so glad that you called me and told me about Harker's because, to be honest with you, you've reinforced what I've always said. He's really good. Now, let me tell you something else you said to me that I picked up on. They only charged the diagnosis and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said that many times, not all the time, once you find it, to fix it is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like diagnostic and a buck to fix it.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to call
Bob and Ellen.
Bob and Ellen.
Find out what it was.
Well, I already wrote it down that 107 to 111.
You know what it was?
What?
It was a corroded connection between the alternator and what goes to the battery. So the battery was telling the alternator it wasn't getting enough charge.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
And so it kept resetting. And he cleaned that out and reconnected it. Fixed.
Okay. And what she's talking about is once we lose the ground, then the alternator, who's supposed to read the battery, the connection's lost. So the alternator sees the battery voltage drop way down to nothing. So the alternator starts running electricity, and it thinks it's charging the battery. In reality, it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sending all this juice to the battery. Well, when the battery gets down so low, it just resets all the electronics. You've heard before, Renee, that when you take the negative cable off, oftentimes like a computer, you unplug the computer, you're done. You reboot your computer. I don't know. That's called a cold boot or something like that. But just like in your computer, on your cell phone, you pull the battery out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, you know, you made my day, Shannon. Thank you very much. Harry and Jack, you stay right there. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was driving around on a very unsafe car because I told you that it stopped twice on me while I was driving. So you saved us. Mm-hmm. You saved us so much, and I'm so glad I called in. And so funny, I called one of my friends, and I said, have you ever heard of this car guy on Saturday? And she said, yeah, my husband and I, we listen to him all the time. And she had just missed me because they had walked into their brother's house. I said, I was just on.
That's funny.
You know, I do hear both sides, but for every 100 get a lot of compliments, but I mess up.
Yeah.
I mess up.
Yeah,
and
you did
I mess
today.
Up. Yeah, and today. Yeah,
we're going to mark that down.
You can. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate owns Strictly Diesel. They work on light domestic diesel trucks. He's very good at what he does. You only have to meet him and shake his hands that are as big as tennis rackets, I might add, before you know that he knows what he's talking about. And he's good enough to say, you need to drive it more. I can't find it. Really good guys will raise their hand sometimes and just say, I can't find it. But Nate doesn't do that very often, if at all, on a monthly basis. So if you've got a diesel and nobody else can fix it, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a good place. Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. You're getting kind of beat up a little bit.
You know what? I want to tell you something.
Working on you, huh?
It's kind of fun, actually.
Harry.
I can hear you over there.
Harry, Harry, you know what? It's okay. I think it's admirable and honorable to raise your hand and say, I'm up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm always
that
willing
happens.
To do that. You know, I've said that more than our Father who art in heaven. And I'm saying I messed up. But anyway, are you just calling to bust me or what?
No. I was going to give a shout out to Kurtz. They've been working on my car for years, and I had a little problem, and it took a little bit. Ended up needing a water pump on my Trailblazer, but. Anyway, those guys do really good work over there, and I just want to let you know they got it fixed and got it running really good, and I got to get it running good enough when I can sell it. So.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. Kurtz is a good place. Like we said, between Kurt, Eric, and Jeff, you have three.
Yeah, Jeff is really. I've had a lot of experience with Jeff.
And the three of those guys. If you give the two young bucks as much experience as Kurt, then you got 100 years of experience over there. And they are really good. And they've always done a good job for me. But anyway, thank you very much, Harry. I'm going to make sure that.
Hey, I got a question that I wanted to ask you. I know you you're kind of a proponent of putting the cheapest oil filters on, and I've got a question about that. I don't drive the miles I used to, so I change my oil about once a year. It's about 6,000 miles that it's usually good, and I use full synthetic, and I've been using, like I have a Honda, I use the Honda filter, and you're saying that, you know, you said in the past that a lot of the filters are made by, you know, just a few manufacturers.
Yes.
And they just paint them up for, you know, whoever they sell them to.
That's true.
My question is on extended oil changes, like you use you know, a synthetic, you know, for, you know, full year or whatever, using a cheaper oil filter, is that a good idea? Because I know they have cellulose, and then they have the, you know, the better synthetic.
Yeah, Harry, those are just
media.
Marketing strategies. You know, they can put diapers in those filters. I don't care. The fact of the matter is,
well, they work good. That's all right.
Yeah. I haven't seen, nor has my staff, and we probably, how many cars a day do we service?
Oh, 25 or 30.
25 or 30 cars a day. We haven't pulled an oil filter out that had sludge in it in 100 years. I don't know if we've ever done that. And there's a bypass valve in there, and the rest of the filter is good. As long as you've got any oil filter, I am adamant, buy the cheapest oil filter you can. I am adamant about, and frankly, I'm not buying a name brand filter and putting them on my customers' cars. Mm-hmm. So if you want to come by, Harry, come by our shop, and I've got some really top of the line oil filters, and they're only $20 a piece. Okay?
Oh, is that all? Well, that's a deal.
Yeah. All righty. Thank you, Harry. I got to move on.
Right.
All righty. Jack, you're up next. How can I help you?
Well, thank you very much. I was just the only thing I asked the person that screened me was whether Adolph's automatic transmission place is still one that you advocate. And it's further on the west side, and I did hear the one that you did mention, the automatic transmission over on Washington, and maybe I'll go there then. But I'm having a little problem with mine at the present time. It's very similar to what I've had before when I took it to Adolph, and I thought he did a very thorough examination. He wasn't absolutely the older person that probably owns the place.
Right.
He brought his son in
right.
to take a look at it, too, and when they both looked at it, and what he said was that it always occurs when it's cold,
yeah.
which is not often in Phoenix. But in any event, he said he thought it was possibly a connection when it's cold like that between the computer on the car and the transmission, and it was just a little too much for him to be able to do.
Okay.
He said you'll almost have to take it to the dealership.
Okay, all right.
So,
all right, I understand, but let me comment real quick. Adolph's was my go-to transmission shop for 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a rule that when it changes hands, that they can't come back on for 5 years. Now, I know Adolph turned it over to his son. And when they got to that five-year mark, his son just – and businesses are allowed to make their own decisions. I don't control their decision. But he decided not to re-up. And basically, to be on our list, as long as you qualify, mm-hmm. is like $100 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing. So anyway, Adolph's – and I suggest you go back – well, he's already sent him to the dealer.
Yeah.
So you can go to Automatic Transmission Exchange, or if you're going to go to the dealer, then you can go to the dealer. I think either one of those would be appropriate to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you, Jack, for the kind words about Adolph, and he still is a good guy. And it's an honorable place that's been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
And what those Fred Flintstone cars, what Automatic Transmission Exchange was around, so was Adolph's.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I have a old club back that I'm restoring, and once in a while I'll take it out of the garage and just let it run. But the evaporation out of the pipe, after it warms up, it goes away. Then it kind of starts to have smoke out of the tailpipes. And if you rev it, it just keeps blowing out, and it's kind of like a whitish blue, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, somebody needs to check that, because if it's white, it's normally water. If it's light blue, it's oil. But somebody needs to check that. And let me ask you a question. Do you ever find the cooling system low on coolant?
No, no, and I've checked the dipstick to see if there's any, like, chocolatey, milky, and the oil. Oil is
not
clear.
Not good enough. That's not a valid test all by itself. So I think I'd much rather ask you this question. When it sits for a long period of time and you start it up, does it run rough for the first 10 or 15 seconds and then everything's okay?
No.
Okay.
All right. Smooth as silk.
All right. I can't answer your question. I don't know. But I would think if you're concerned about the smoke, then you need to have somebody identify what the smoke is from. And white is either coolant or automatic transmission fluid. Engine oil is blue, and too much fuel is black. So if you can just kind of identify the color a little bit better, then I think we're going to be on a better track. But I can't fix your car with the symptoms you've given me, because we need to sit firm on what color it is. And then we also need to know if there's any other issues. Does it consume oil and that kind of stuff? So, but we can continue this conversation if you just email me at mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. But anyway, thank you, Dave, and I'm going to put you down as cold. I'm not going to be able to take any more calls, because I want to finish up a story that we started at the beginning.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. I think there's a caller on the line, but Gil, if you would just give him my email address, and if he emails me his name and phone number right now, I'll call him at the end of the show.
You got it.
All righty. But we talked about Bill Schwartz. Bill
right.
Schwartz is a customer of ours.
Right.
He's been a friend of mine since 1994. He's a real estate agent. He helped me buy the property that our facility sits on.
Okay.
Him and I work well together. We're both ornery. So Bill picks up his Escalade on Friday afternoon. He's the last one to pick it up. He's been golfing.
Mm-hmm.
So he drives it home, which is what, a mile?
I don't know.
All right. So he drives it home, and all of a sudden, his life comes to an end. He's just sitting in his car, and he can't get out of his Escalade. He can't get out of it. So he calls my son, Alan, who's halfway home to Peoria, and he says, Alan, I can't get out of my car. I need to get out of my car. I'm locked in the car. So Alan goes, holy mackerel. He says, okay, I'll turn around. So he drives over to Bill's. As he walks up, now keep in mind Alan's 6'3", 6'4".
Uh-huh.
He's got a full beard on him. He's a man mountain Mike.
Yeah, twice your size.
Twice my size. And that's something we need to talk about, is a DNA test on that kid.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so he walks up to the door and he puts his hand. Now Bill's got the window down. He's sweating profusely. He's flushed. And he goes, you know, I was going to crawl over the console and go out the passenger side, but I didn't know if that door would open, and I was going to crawl out the window, and I'm just beside himself. And so Alan sees that the door lock is down, so Alan puts his hand on the edge of the window, and he reaches over and he just lifts the latch, and he goes, now try it, Bill. And Bill opens up the door, and Bill just about hugs him and kisses him. And he goes, how did you do that? And Alan goes, well, there's a button right here on the door, and you have to lift that up. I was pushing the button over here on the door. He had electric door locks.
Right.
Well, the solenoid obviously is bad. It's nothing we worked on. Nothing.
Right.
So then Alan calls back, and he said, Dad, you left part of the story out.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. He said, Dad, think about this. He just came off the golf course. Mm-hmm. He's flustered beyond belief. He can't get out of his car. Daddy needed to go to the bathroom.
Oh, my gosh. So you told the rest of that story again for that?
Yeah. He needed to go
I'm
to the
sure
bathroom.
I'm sure everybody probably figured that out.
I didn't. Did you?
Yeah. I'm the one that said it.
I know, but that was 10 minutes ago.
I know.
All right. The issue is, his name is Bill Schwartz. He's a golfer, and he's a real estate guy. He's really a good guy. I'm going to do a free commercial for him because he's a good guy.
He is.
At the time, we bought 100,000 feet, which is 2.5 acres.
Yeah.
And at the time, they wanted $4 or $5 a foot, which is $400,000 or $500,000. Well, at the end of the day, Bill negotiated to $235 a square foot, which dropped our price from $400,000 to $500,000 to $235,000
mm-hmm.
for commercial industrial property. I1.
Yeah.
That's where our car repair shop sits on today on Warner Road.
Yep.
And so Bill's a good guy. So if you're looking for a real estate agent and you need somebody who is what was that guy's name? The poker player on that Western Maverick? Was that his name?
I don't know.
Bill's a heck of a poker player.
Yeah.
Heck of a poker player. He is really good at what he does. Nevertheless, Mark,
and I'm glad you didn't say any bad words today because your grandson's listening.
And you know, that's the bad part. Do you know what his middle name is?
Yeah.
Is it like mine?
Same as yours.
Is it really? Okay.
Oh, is it really? You've only known him for 11 years. Of course it is.
You know,
that's why you call him Mark Jr. I'm glad he's nothing like you.
There is another Mark Salem out there. How old is he? How old is he, Grandma?
Are you talking about Rex or Mark?
Mark.
Mark is 11.
Mark is 11. His name is just like mine, Mark Salem.
Uh-huh.
We have the same in middle name.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't want you, if your daughter brings him home, I don't want you to hold that against him.
That's right.
Because he is my son's son.
Yes.
But
he's not anything like you. He's a good kid.
Oh, no, he is. Yeah. He is really a good kid.
Mm-hmm.
He is, and he's quiet. And when he works at the shop, the other day he showed up, I don't know what, sweatpants and something with a company T-shirt. And I looked at him and I said, we're never wearing sweatpants to this office again. And he goes, yes, sir. That's what he said. Yes, sir. Now, I don't know if he has a girlfriend. Why don't you call him and we'll give a shout out to his girlfriend.
No, he doesn't have one.
Yes, he does. And I know, I can tell by looking at you, he does.
Okay.
But anyway, what school does he go to?
I'm not going to.
You're not going to tell him that? Okay. I'm not allowed to say anything?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, his name's Mark Salem.
That's right.
And there's only one other Mark Salem in the world, and he's related to me.
That's right.
Anyway, mark@marksalem.com is my email address, mark@marksalem.com. And thank you for spending your Saturday with me.
Yeah.
It's a holiday weekend,
yeah.
And Renee and I are going to enjoy the rest of the day. As a matter of fact, we're leaving the ranch in just a little while, right after we take the dogs in for a groom, and we're going to go down and meet with the family and spend the rest of Easter and with the grandkids and
That's
stuff.
That's right. Have an Easter egg hunt.
1 minute.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you get all the eggs.
And just remember, if your daughter starts talking about a young man named Mark Salem that she likes, give him a chance, please. It's kind of like you and me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Did your dad like me?
Yeah, he did. He didn't know you very well. Yeah.
Did your mother like me?
Yeah.
I know she does now.
At that point.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know your mom likes me now because I just got her fire truck running.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and by the way, I don't have time enough to tell it. I was going to tell the jet story. My dog's laying down. I'm trying to work on this gasoline vacuum. It took me 2 days, and the carburetor was bad, and I had to order one on the internet. And the dog's, and I got it running, and it's really loud. And the dog's laying down and looks up to me and says, well, Mr. Car Guy, it's about time you got this thing running. I've been working on it for 2 days.
Yeah.
I thought I could fix the carburetor. I thought I could fix it. Well, guess what? I can't.
You can't.
So I had to buy a $19 carburetor on the internet, and it works fine. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com. Please wear your seatbelt, and God bless you, and I'll see you here next Saturday at 10 o'clock.